Hello and welcome to the 5x, your Quattro weekly source for rapid-fire board game reviews. I'm one of your hosts, Justin Bell. In this episode, Ruel gets chocolatey with his review of the Golden Ticket game. John will try his best not to drop the ball with his reviews of Drop Polter and Rafter 5. Jose flies to a fantastical island for his review of Fractured Sky, and I'll try my best to not make any Harold and Kumar jokes in my review of The White Castle. But first, let's get nerd sexy in Sarah's review of Dorf Romantic.
My personal rule of thumb is that if I'm going to review a hot new game, I do it either right when it first comes out or much later, when enough time has passed that people might be interested in hearing about it again. And today, I'm breaking that rule by reviewing Dorf Romantic, the board game, which won the Spiel des Jahres for 2023, less than a year ago. What can I say? Dorf Romantic has been sitting on my shelf of shame for months. And now that I know how good it is, I wish I had pulled it off that shelf a long time ago. Designed by Michael Palm and Lucas Zack and published by Pegasus Spiel in 2022, Dorf Romantic, the board game, is based on an acclaimed video game by Tucana Interactive. Technically, Dorf Romantic is the name of the video game, and Dorf Romantic the board game is the name of the board game. But from here on, when I say Dorf Romantic, I'll be referring to the board game. I haven't played the video game version of Dorf Romantic, mainly because I don't own either of the platforms it's available on, so I can't compare the board game and video game versions. What I can say is that Dorf Romantic the board game is stellar. Dorf means village in German, and Dorf Romantic is a solo or co-op game about laying hexagonal tiles to create a rural landscape. You're probably thinking about Carcassonne right now, and you're not wrong. Though they differ in some key ways, both Carcassonne and Dorf Romantic have a lovely, chill feel to them. With each tile, you expand the landscape, slowly building out a community, and it's just so calming and peaceful. The tiles in Dorf Romantic depict houses, forests, fields, railroad tracks, and rivers, with simple but charming art by Paul Riebe. Tracks and rivers have to match from tile to tile, but everything else can be placed however you like. Some tiles have tasks, which ask you to group together tiles with matching features, say 6 forest tiles together or 4 train tracks. The same group of tiles can score multiple times. Occasionally, I manage to score a single group with 4, then 5, then 6, and it's such a good feeling. Tasks are the main way to score points, especially at first, which brings me to what makes Dorf Romantic so special. The box calls it a replayable campaign, which, to be honest, I kind of groaned inside when I saw that. I've played a lot of quote-unquote campaign games that felt kind of tacked on and didn't make sense. But in Dorf Romantic, the campaign is simply an achievement track. At the end of every game, you fill in spaces on the track based on how many points you got. And at regular intervals along the track, you get to unlock cards that add new goals and/or mechanisms to the game. The achievement track is where Dorf Romantic really shows its video game origin. It looks like a skill tree in a video game, and it kind of is. Many of the unlockable achievements give you new ways to score points, just like a new skill in a video game would. Moving up on Dorf Romantic's achievement track gives you that little endorphin hit that video games are so good at that just make you want to keep playing. You feel accomplishment as you fill in the circles, then the thrill of getting to read a new card and think about how it fits into your game, and then you see how close you are to unlocking the next achievement and you can't wait to play again. If you've ever lost a whole day to a video game thinking just one more level over and over, then you'll understand why I unboxed Dorf Romantic, played a learning game, then played 3 more games immediately, and then 4 more games the next day. I haven't yet had a game where I didn't unlock at least one new component, and it's often multiples, so there's something new to look forward to every time. It's addictive. Dorf Romantic starts out very simple. There isn't much to it at first. You could play the starter game with young kids. But as you unlock achievements and have to juggle different goals, the game becomes, well, never heavy, more of a challenge. I'm in mid-campaign, and I like to set myself a goal for each game, pick an achievement that I'm going to try to reach in that game. But I still have to be able to pivot if the tiles don't come out right for what I intended to do. By a few games in, there are enough different achievements and mechanisms available that you have a lot of flexibility in how you approach any specific game. There's a surprising amount to think about, but Dwarf Romantic never loses that relaxed, charming vibe. It's somehow restful and energizing at the same time. The co-op and solo games are basically the same, except that with co-op you take turns. Resetting a campaign is easy, and thanks to the checkboxes every time you get an achievement, setting back up a campaign in progress is easy too. I think it could get tedious to try to run two campaigns simultaneously. It would probably be fine if you didn't try to alternate games, if you took a little break from one campaign to make progress in the other, and then switched back. I don't have any caveats or reservations about Dwarf Romantic, although I do see the game is not for everyone. If you love fast-paced games, competition and take that, you might not like Dwarf Romantic. If you don't like solo or co-op games, or tile-laying games, or games with a chill vibe, you might not like Dwarf Romantic. But for me, it's just about perfection. It's kind of hard to imagine someone designing a game better suited to what I love about board games. And that's Dwarf Romantic. My name is Sarah. Look me up on the social medias, at Sarah Ovenall or at Ovenall. That's O-V-E-N-A-L-L. Especially if you want to chat about charming solo tile-laying games. Then I really, really want to hear from you.
The eccentric and elusive candy maker Willy Wonka is offering the chance to visit his chocolate factory. He's hidden a few golden tickets in his company's Wonka bars, giving would-be visitors a chance to see and explore the world-famous building. Will you be the one to find the golden ticket and win a tour for the ages? Or will one of your opponents snatch up this life-changing opportunity? Hi friends, this is Ruel Gaviola. On the table is The Golden Ticket Game, a game by AC Atenzia. The Golden Ticket Game was published in 2021 by Buffalo Games. In The Golden Ticket Game, 2 to 5 players take on the roles of ticket seekers Charlie Bucket, Augustus Gloop, Mike TV, Violet Beauregard, or Veruca Salt. On your turn, you'll perform 2 of 3 actions, play a card, discard to move a space, or refill your hand. Your main goal, get as many Wonka bars as possible. Depending on the card played or the location tile you land on, you'll either receive Wonka bars or money or Wonka cards. The money and cards may be later exchanged into those precious Wonka bars. After all Wonka bars have been claimed from the supply, everyone opens the bars they've collected during the game. Whoever finds the golden ticket wins! I'm not going to bury the lead here. The Golden Ticket Game has one of the most thrilling and thematic conclusions of any board game I've ever played. This alone makes it worth a play, especially for fans of the 1970s movie starring Gene Wilder. Every time I've played this game, the player who finds the golden ticket screams in delight. Seriously, no other game I've played consistently delivers an ending like this one. Note: The Golden Ticket Game is not a scene-by-scene reenactment of Gene Wilder leading the winners through his fantastical factory. This is a game about everything except the factory itself. There are no Oompa Loompas to be seen, no adventures or misadventures to be had. Instead, The Golden Ticket Game captures the excitement and emotion of finding a golden ticket. It transports you into that scene where Charlie shares his good news with Grandpa Joe. What I really appreciated about The Golden Ticket Game is that there were little touches throughout the gameplay that elevate it from an IP cash grab and make it into a solid gateway game. You and your opponents take turns moving around the tiles, which reminded me of the setup for the game Istanbul. In fact, you can flip over the tiles to side B for a more challenging layout. Now, for your 2 actions, you may discard a card from your hand to move 1 space and activate the ability on that space. Or you may play a card from your hand, which will move you to certain spaces on the board, gain chocolate bars or money, or do other actions. Finally, you may refill your hand. While these aren't the heaviest decisions you'll ever make playing a board game, they work well within the context of a family weight game and can even be scaled down for younger or newer gamers. On any given turn, you may face a choice between gaining a Wonka bar or money. Do you immediately gain a Wonka bar, or do you take the money to exchange for cards or Wonka bars on a later turn? The number of Wonka bars remaining in the supply and the number of players left to act may influence your decision here. I like the variety of cards. They're used for set collection, immediate actions, movement, and money. As you play cards, you tuck them under your player card and eventually may take the sweeping action. Depending on the card or the space that triggers the sweeping, you take specific cards from your player board and discard them in order to gain Wonka bars, cards, or money. And if the Candy Baron himself, Willy Wonka, happens to be in the space you landed on, then you also receive a free Wonka bar. There's even some asymmetry in the game. Yes, unique player boards. Depending on which character you choose, you might have more allowance, aka money, like Veruca, who starts with 8 money instead of 5 like the others. And of course, poor Charlie begins with only 3 money. Augustus gets to refill his hand for free. Mike TV gets an extra action if he plays 2 rowdy cards, etc., etc. I love this bit of asymmetry, especially since it all feels thematically related to the characters. Again, we're not talking root-level factions here, but each character does feel a little different. Astute board gamers will realize that the ending of the Golden Ticket board game relies heavily on luck. All you're doing is opening up your collection of Wonka bars you've collected during the game, hoping that one of them has that elusive golden ticket. Of course, you can improve your odds of getting the lucky candy bar by collecting as many as possible throughout the game. For those who hate luck in board games or despise any bit of randomness when playing a game, I'm not going to try to convince you that the Golden Ticket game will change your mind on luck in board games. But with only a 20-minute playtime, even the most hardened and luck-averse gamer can delight in the greatest ending of any board game I've ever played. Opening a Wonka bar and discovering the winning Golden Ticket inside. It's the best feeling ever. This has been Ruel Gaviola for the 5x. Thanks for listening. Find me on social media at Ruel Gaviola. That's RuelGaviola.
Hey everybody, this is John Gonzalez. Let's take a look at two games from Oink Games' fantastic line of small boxed games. First up is Rafter 5 from Mashio and Jun Sasaki. Rafter 5 is a dexterity game in which you and up to 5 other players take turns placing planks on a tiny raft and holding them in place with the Rafter 5 meeples. The planks are plank-shaped cards, and the meeples are these odd little ghostly-looking meeples that kind of remind me of Baymax from Big Hero 6. The raft is the game box bottom stacked on top of the top part of the box, with a little card that looks like a raft on top of it. If you're familiar with Oink Games, you know that the box sizes are small and mostly uniform across their line of games. Think of a box roughly the size of a chunky dry erase whiteboard eraser and you're there. On your turn, you're picking up one of the Rafter 5 from the raft, all the while hoping that it isn't holding down any essential load-bearing planks. You then take a plank card and place it on top of the raft, and then you take the rafter you picked up in the first step and place it on top of the plank you just placed. But the fun doesn't end there, no. You also have to contend with placing cargo tokens on that very same plank you placed this round. The cargo are these tiny wooden treasure chest-shaped pieces in your player color. It can be a bit nerve-wracking to skillfully take all the steps required of you during your turn. Some turns into the game, there's going to be a wild-looking raft full of Rafter 5 figures, planks, and treasure chests. It not only looks wild, but removing rafters at the beginning of your turn is, well, it's not going to be easy. The purpose of the treasure chest pieces is mostly to exist on the raft until someone knocks them over. If you knock over treasure chests that belong to other players, you take them as penalties. If you collect enough penalties to fill up your player card, you lose. The game ends in one of three ways: when someone collects enough penalties, when there are no more plank cards, or when everyone has placed all their treasure chests. In this latter case, the loser is determined by the most penalties taken. I can see Rafter 5 competing in that Jenga space for fun dexterity games that we bring out when everyone is too tired to learn anything new, but we still want to play one more game. Late night at board game conventions is a good time to whip this one out. And just generally anytime you need to pick up the energy levels and unlock everyone's wacky side. Speaking of wacky sides, let's talk about Drow Poulter. Two games in one segment? That's right, these games are so nice, I thought I would review them twice. Drow Poulter is also from Oink Games, and it's also a dexterity game. It's designed by Paul Scholes. Drow Poulter has a great theme. Essentially, you were awoken or awakened from sleep by a gaggle of ghosts, and only a specific set of lucky charms will stop them from haunting you. This is a quick and hilarious game for 2 to 5 players. Okay, so basically in Drow Poulter, everyone gets a set of lucky charms. No, not the breakfast cereal. Rather, every player gets a ring, a cracker, a key, a seashell, and a cube. All of these are small and plastic, and they're actually rather nice for tabletop game components. Everyone holds their 5 charms in one hand, while a card depicting a specific set of charms is revealed on the table from the themed deck. The goal here is to be the first person to drop the charms that are depicted on the card and grab the delightfully chunky ghost piece from the center of the table. So you flip over a card showing a cube, a key, and a cracker, and everyone has to drop a cube, key, and a cracker from their hand. But here's the trick. You can't use your free hand. You can look at what's in your hand, but you cannot use your free hand to sort through the items. If you're the first to do it, you grab the ghost token and score a point. That's great. Points are great. Good for you, sport. You need 5 of those to win the game. Unfortunately, the points in Drow Poulter are represented by tiny jingle bells that you have to keep in your hand along with your lucky charms. Guess what happens when you drop one of those jingle bells? Yep, you lose a victory point. The game is hilarious to play and hilarious to watch. If you end up picking up this one, the only downside is that you are going to have to explain the name. I didn't see any explanation in the rulebook of what Drow Poulter means, but it did occur to me during a late night session that the name might come from a portmanteau or mashup of drop and poltergeist. It makes sense since you are dropping items and warding off poltergeist, I guess? Anyhow, Drow Poulter is a perfect double feature with Raptor 5 to end the game night, as they are both rules light and can be very fun to play when everyone is in need of a quick boost of adrenaline and energy. I really like pairing these two games up because you go from the delicate and skillful placement of lumber and rafters in Raptor 5 to the chaotic and frenzied action of dropping charms in Drow Poulter, all in about the space of 1 hour. Alright, so there you have it, Raptor 5 and Drow Poulter. If you end up playing these and take some pictures or videos of it that are hilarious, please tag me. You can find me as Book of Nerds on pretty much anything out there. For the 5x, I'm John Gonzalez. Thanks for listening.
A shattering star. Islands rising from the sea. Cosmic octopuses that grant wishes. All of these are the background for today's game, Fractured Sky. Designed by Max Anderson, Zach Dixon, and Austin Harrison. Published by Ivy Studio. Yeah, that same Ivy Studio that I've talked about before. Fractured Sky plays 1 to 5 Star Seekers looking to collect the most Star Shards and get their wish granted. In order to set up the game, you're going to take the game board and place it... Yep, that's right, in the center of the table. And everyone's going to take their faction's color-coded pieces. You're going to set out a public Star Shard that everyone knows where it is, and also set out some cards that will have hidden objectives and hidden Starfall pieces that you're going to be searching for throughout the course of the game. When you play the game, you have just a couple of options. As a player, you can either place a airship to make a hidden bid for influence on one of the locations on the board, or you can build a building or a skimmer to give yourself some advantages or additional resources, or you can scout one of the hidden cards to gain more information about how to score in the current or future rounds, or where one of the hidden Starfall pieces are. The round ends once everyone puts out their third starship, and then you're going to reveal your strength and distribute rewards as needed. And after 5 rounds, the player with the most Starfall pieces wins. Now, this is just a very quick general review of the game. There's a couple of other smaller rules, but generally speaking, that's it. That's all the rules in the game. And honestly, Fractured Sky threw me for a loop initially after I read the rules, and I just started thinking, really? That's it? There's no game here. This isn't going to be fun. This is going to be a terrible review. But then, Studio Ivy has this really nasty habit of creating deceptively simple but really interactive experiences around the table. If you don't believe me, check out episodes 120 and 126, where I talk about some of their other games. And every group that I ended up playing this with so far has really enjoyed the amount of interaction that the game centers around. Yes, everything is hidden, and technically this is a mixture of area influence, area control, deduction, and bidding, but it doesn't feel like any of those games. It just feels like you're playing mind games with each other because everyone gets little bits and pieces of information, and you're trying to parse out, where are these Starfall pieces? What does everyone at the table know, and what do I not know? And it makes for some really fun revelations once everyone reveals their bids and you start pointing like, oh, that's why you did that, that's why you did this. And it is such an interactive experience. There are a couple of qualms I do have with the game. First off, and the most minor of qualms really, is that I wish the board was a little bit bigger. It's kind of a small board considering how many things are going to be put on the board, and sometimes some of the lines are a little muddled and hard to read. If that was just a little bit bigger, I think that would be remedied. The other thing that's a little strange is most of the artwork is fantastic in this game. I love the box art. I love the art on the board. I like the design of the pieces that you have for your buildings and skimmers. But you also get some artwork that represents the factions that you're supposed to represent, and it kind of doesn't fit the vibe of the game. There's a kind of this 3D Saturday morning cartoon kind of feel to that artwork, and it doesn't... I feel like it clashes a little bit. But I mean, that is a very minor complaint, considering it doesn't really have any implications for the actual gameplay. Now, my complaints about the gameplay is this game really does depend on player interaction. Yes, I did say this game can play one or two players, but solo is an experience. But you're really doing yourself a disservice to this game if you're playing this by yourself. You're not really getting the true Fractured Sky experience. When you play with lower player counts, you are playing with some solo AI cards, which are really easy to implement, and they do a pretty good job of sort of acting as if other people may act. But really, this game shines when you have 4 or 5 players playing around the table. Even at 3, it is actually very good. The rules are a good set of mechanics that really encourage the interaction between players. So, time to talk about the cosmic octopus in the room. Now, Studio IV does pride themselves in making premium games, and they kind of have the price tag to match. The deluxe edition does have 3D plastic pieces and bidding chips that are magnetized, and they're probably my favorite game piece of the year. But the retail version does come with cardboard versions of all that, which are still 100% functional and they're still useful. It's just the deluxe edition pieces are just a little bit nicer. The table presence of this game is off the charts, no matter what version of the game that you have. The retail edition falls in line with the cost of most larger box games, so I think this is probably one of the more affordable games in the Studio IV line. But you can drop some money in trying to get the upgraded pieces with the deluxe edition. But that being said, I do feel like the quality of the games that they produce as a package, as a whole, justifies their price tag. So this is a game that I can recommend to people looking for a really interactive and light game. So my name is Jose. You can find me on X at SirBearsworth1, Instagram and Blue Sky at SirBearsworth. Come by, say hi, and let me know what you wish for. I'm going to get those purple jet boots one day.
Hey gang, Justin Bell here with the 5x. Oh man, I love the Red Cathedral. I love it. It was my favorite game released in 2020, just edging out Beyond the Sun, thanks to my favorite game mechanic of that year, the incredible dice rondel that made each and every turn a blast. The Red Cathedral was designed by Israel Sandrero and Sheila Santos, the duo known as Llama Dice. When I learned that Devir, the publisher that gave us The Red Cathedral, was releasing the newest game from Llama Dice, I reached out to grab a review copy faster than you can say Dice Bridges. The White Castle has players trying to advance the standing of their clan, with the daimyo of the Himeji Castle in the Japan of the distant past. And how will players advance that standing? They will pluck dice off of cute cardboard dice bridges in a game that only has 9 turns. Yes, you heard me. Only 9 turns. A series of 6-sided dice in 3 colors, coral, black, and white, are rolled to start a round. The dice pool includes 1 of each color die per player, with an extra die in each color to offer more choices and trigger end-of-round bonuses. On a turn, a player selects 1 of the dice at either end of a dice bridge. A selected die must be placed in 1 of the game's action selection areas. Most of these placement areas are restrictive. Dice can only be activated in areas of the board aligned with tokens matching the die color. Now, these dice placement spots are further limited by the number of pips on the space. Let's say the space has 3 pips. If you place a 5-pip die there, you'll receive 2 coins before taking your action. 5 minus 3 is +2, meaning a benefit. Now place a 2-pip die there, and you'll have to pay a coin to use that action. 2 minus 3 is -1, meaning a cost. Some of the actions in the White Castle are standard Euro fare. Grab stuff, collect money, etc. Some are more specialized. The gardener action gets you immediate rewards by moving meeples from your player mat to a farm area on the left side of the map, as well as potential bonuses between rounds. The warrior action sends meeples from your player mat to the main board to score points aligned to the placement of your courtiers. The courtier action lets players move meeples into and up the White Castle featured on the main board, triggering bonuses and endgame area scoring that could score a nice river of points. The actions are easy to teach, and the game's flexibility and player count mean that the game is interesting in both solo and multiplayer formats. The production here is just gorgeous. Player mats that track resources, and production yields while also serving as a player aid. The dice bridges are easy to assemble and give the board a nice visual boost as well. The iconography is clean and is summarized nicely on the back of the rulebook for all players to reference during play. But it's the action efficiency, the combos, and the game's overall duration that really have me in love. You can knock out a two-player game of the White Castle in about 40 minutes and feel like you had a really rich time at the table. Even with a full four-player count, my plays have taken about 75 minutes. Exceptional for a game of this type. This is key because as much as I love combo-rich games from the quote-unquote Italian masters, such as Toletum and Grand Austria Hotel, some of those turns can take 5 to 7 minutes. In the White Castle, even the turns that have combos still buzz by in about 2 or 3 minutes. With the White Castle, my high expectations have been met. I wish Llama Dice would put out a $30 game that had this much game in the box every year. So I'll cross my fingers and hope that this duo is in the lab right now, dreaming up their next creation. For more of my tabletop content, check out my profile at www.meeplemountain.com. You can also find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Threads at Justin Bell Says. That's JustinBellSays. Thanks for listening. Now get out there and roll some dice.
You've been listening to the 5x, your monthly source for board game reviews. Feel free to follow us on Twitter at 5xGames. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/5xGames. Join our BGG Guild, number 2810. Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And check out our website at 5xGames.com. If you like what we do here and want to support our work, visit our Patreon at patreon.com/5xGames. And as always, thank you for listening.
For more shows like this, check out the Goonhammer Media Network. More info at media.goonhammer.com.